we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, January the 19th, 2018. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by our guest co-host, Denise Swanson.
Happy Friday.
And our control room operator, Amir Ali.
Good afternoon.
And we have a special guest also who's live audience member today, and that's our former founder of Animal Voices, Carl Losking. Hi, Carl.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
Best thing about Fridays is listening to Animal Voices.
For sure, for sure. So the theme of today's show is centered on dairy. For our first interview today, we have local animal activist and former undercover investigator Jeff Regier here to tell us about the story of four dairy calves who were discovered neglected at a hobby farm in Langley over the Christmas holidays. Two have died so far, and Jeff is working to find a permanent home for these two remaining young babies who are byproducts of the dairy industry. Jeff will be telling us more about the story and what he wants you to know about the cruelties of producing cow's milk for human consumption. Then we'll have a short interview with local activist and director of the film Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, Gary Charbonneau, to share with us his thoughts on yesterday's announcement by the Vancouver Aquarium that they will no longer be keeping whales and dolphins in captivity. This is a victory for the animals here in Canada. And for our feature interview, we have Olympic medalist Dotsie Bausch on the show. She is the founder of a California-based organization called Compassion Champs, which strives to educate the public worldwide on the immense, widespread suffering of animals in our industrial food system. She'll be here to tell us about the Plant Milk Challenge, which she is hosting this week, as well as how her vegan diet has supported her in achieving success as one of the world's top professional athletes. That interview is coming up in about 29 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So, being that this week is the Plant Milk Challenge, I wanted to talk about some of our favorite dairy alternative recipes that are plant-based, that is, with no dairy and no cruelty of the dairy industry, and we'll be finding out more about that later. But Denise, I'm happy to have you here today because you like making vegan food, as do I, and you are quite creative in the kitchen, so thanks for coming today, and I want us to share some of our favorite vegan dairy alternative recipes. And basically, I would say that you can make anything that is traditionally dairy-based but with vegan ingredients. Now, we both took Karen McCarthy's plant-based cheesemaking course last year, and Karen is she's a well-known local plant-based cheesemaker here in Vancouver.
And I'll be telling you about an event later on with her.
Oh, cool. And she owns the Blue Heron Company. And I know you really went all out in your experimenting last year with making cheese cultures and doing her recipes. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, over the years, vegan cheese has really evolved from some fairly simple instant things where you would just add nutritional yeast, which is still very valid and very useful for making all kinds of cheesy tasting things.
Such as the kale chips I brought today.
Yes, exactly. many, many things. Yes. And then Miyoko Shinner had a book called Artisan Vegan Cheese a few years ago. That was very, very popular.
I still love that book. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. And I still make her yogurt, her cashew yogurt recipe from that book. And then there's so many other things. And as you were saying, local chef Karen McCarthy teaches cheese making workshops, and you and I took that. And her workshops are a little bit, her cheeses are quite authentic. She doesn't use a lot of filler type things. Very often it's just nuts usually nuts and some culturing in
And I think that's what it's all about with her, right? Is culturing the cheeses.
Yeah.
Because that's like a very, it makes it very authentic tasting.
Sure. Using things like Rejuvelac, mm-hmm. which is grains that mm-hmm. have been soaked, mm-hmm. Or the water that they've been soaked in, and kefir as well, depending on whether you want more bacteria or more yeast, which would affect the flavor.
I find it really fun and interesting to go through that process of fermenting and making the Rejuvelac.
Because the biology is fascinating,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's an experiment. It's a science experiment. You never know how it's going to turn out. But I have to say as well, is if you're not into that, you can make non-fermented, non-cultured cheeses, which Karen calls cheese, C-H-E-E-Z-E. She says they're not real cheeses. But I actually posted something on our Facebook earlier today, Animal Voice. Vancouver, all these awesome looking recipes that I want to delve into. Now, Denise, you taught me about, nice cream. I want to talk about that. Nice cream is basically ice cream made out of bananas, but you introduced the Yonanis machine to me, and it's this amazing machine that you stick in frozen bananas into, and out comes out basically soft serve ice cream that tastes just like, to me, traditional soft serve ice cream,
yeah,
but without the dairy.
You can make it in a food processor too.
Mm-hmm. I never do that.
But the thing about the Yonanis machine, which is just a small, simple, cheap machine, is you don't have to put any liquid to make the machine run smoothly. You just put the frozen bananas with or without other fruit through the machine, and so there's no other ingredients whatsoever, just fruit, and it comes out with a very, very smooth,
right,
soft serve texture.
Now, Denise is getting rid of her Yonanis machine, so I'm offering it up as a prize here for anyone who wants a Yonanis machine. Send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. You have to be a member of Co-op Radio, and we'll have that first person basically who emails us, you'll get a free Yonanis machine, and it makes the most delicious ice cream. That's all the time that we have, though, but you'll have to come back later so we can talk about more, including mm-hmm. coconut whipped cream.
Thank you.
You're listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 CFRO. We are a non-commercial station bringing you voices and stories and perspectives you probably won't hear elsewhere. We are supported by members and by donations. You can become a member by going to our website at www.coopradio.org. If you like what you hear but don't want to be a member, that's cool too. You can still help by clicking on the donate arrow at the top right of the website. Co-op Radio thanks you for listening and for helping build our community of listeners and programmers.
You know I need your love. You know that holds over me.
For our first interview today, we have local animal advocate Jeff Regier here in the studio, a former undercover investigator for the organization Mercy for Animals. Jeff is now based in Vancouver, where he dedicates his time to advocating for animals and educating the public on multiple issues that surround the abuse of animals and our consumption of them. In the last 3 weeks, Jeff has been involved in a rescue effort of several dairy calves that were found neglected on a hobby farm in Langley on Boxing Day, and he is here today to tell us the story. Hello, Jeff. Welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Thanks for having me.
So please tell us what happened on Boxing Day at this hobby farm when you were spending the holidays in Langley.
Well, a friend of mine contacted me as she's renting a place on this farm property, and she was deeply concerned about the welfare of primarily a sheep, but also several calves there as well, mm-hmm. who were being neglected and improperly cared for.
And these calves were discovered. Can you tell us about that? I understand that there were 4 in total, and by the time you got there, one had already died. So what kind of state were they in?
Yeah, dairy calves often don't get the colostrum from their mothers because they're separated at the dairy farms, and so they're already prone to disease right off the bat quite often. But so these calves had pneumonia and scours, which is common for calves that are taken from their mothers before receiving the colostrum.
What scours?
It's a sickness. The primary symptom is diarrhea.
It's malnutrition, basically. They're not getting what they need because they're being ripped apart from their mothers for right after they're born. So I'm curious to know, why did this hobby farm even have dairy calves? How is that part of their farm structure?
Well, it's as dairy calves are a waste product of the dairy industry, so they are so cheap. They cost $25 for a baby male calf at the auction, so they're really cheap. And for a hobby farm, I mean, to some people, they're just cute pets, but a lot of people just don't know what's involved and required for them.
Well, I understand that the owner of the farm, he talks about how he rescues animals from livestock auctions, but then they slaughter them there as well. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a bizarre scenario. Yeah, they tout the rescues that they have on their website, but to me, that's not a rescue. If you rescue someone just to slaughter them, that's something very different to me, and I think most people.
That's not a rescue. That's
no.
not. I mean, we know many animal sanctuaries, like in Canada and in North America, and they take their animals to live in peace and harmony for the rest of their lives, not to slaughter them. That's just not a rescue.
Why are they slaughtering them if they're rescuing them? What is their purpose after all?
Consumption. They want to eat them.
Yeah, so that's what I guess was going to be the fate of the dairy calves. But I understand, the people who are taking care of them actually didn't know what they were doing. They had never taken care of little baby calves before, so they were trying to. This is why they got sick, right? They were trying to wean them after 48 hours by feeding them solid foods.
Yeah, they were. The calves were essentially starved because, a newly born calf will only drink milk, and you can't feed them
just
hay
like
and
a
grain.
Newly born
human
mammal. Any mammal, yeah.
Right. So, Jeff, you are a former undercover investigator with the organization Mercy for Animals, and you have personal experience with working undercover at a dairy farm. And you actually exposed the abuse of dairy cows nationwide at a farm in Chilliwack a few years ago, through which criminal charges have been laid against the owners and workers at this farm. Now, having seen all the abuse against cows in the dairy industry, what would you like to tell our listeners who still consume the milk products of animals? And perhaps you can share with us some of the things that you witnessed at the dairy farm that you were working at.
Yeah, for anyone who remembers the story back in 2014, they would have heard the media talk about all the egregious and gratuitous violence, beating cows, breaking their tails, lifting them up in the air by a chain around their neck and lifting them up with a tractor bucket. That's the kind of thing that the media focuses on. But I'd like to tell your listeners the story that the media doesn't typically cover and didn't cover in this instance either. On dairy farms, in order to get this milk, farmers forcibly impregnate mother cows, and after 9 months of pregnancy, just like same time as a human gestation, the mother cow will endure the challenges of labor, give birth, affectionately clean her baby, all just for the farmer to steal the baby away that she'll never see again. And then if it's a boy, male dairy cows are a waste product of the dairy industry. They'll either be slaughtered and discarded or slaughtered and consumed in the form of veal. And then the mother will be re-impregnated because the farmer wants to keep the milk productions high.
And they only produce milk if they're lactating because they've had a baby.
Hence the saying, there's veal in every glass of milk.
Yep. And a dairy cow would normally live sometimes 20 plus years. But on a dairy farm, a mother dairy cow will be sent to the slaughterhouse after 4 to 6 years because they're just worn out from being kept in a constant state of impregnation and producing massive amounts of milk. It takes a huge toll on their body, so their reward for years of service as a milk machine is to limp up a ramp onto a truck and get taken to the slaughterhouse where they will have their throat slit and then be sold as cheap hamburger.
Right. I always tell people who are mothers that they should particularly feel sympathetic with these issues, because if you're a human mother, you would know what it's like to have your baby taken away from you. And I swear, like, I have seen so many videos online of baby cows being separated from their mothers and the mothers running after the truck and then mooing for weeks.
It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. So what were some of the things that you witnessed at this dairy farm that you would like to let our listeners know about how the animals were treated?
Well, I mean, a lot of the times, like a lot of even the gratuitous violence, just like the cows being severely beaten and like that is... Like, it looks like that's not part of the operation, but that is part of the operation. That, like, those canes are provided by the farmers to force the cows that don't want to go into the parlor to go into the parlor because they don't want to for whatever reason, whether it's they're afraid of the machinery or they have mastitis and it's quite a painful experience to be milked. So they get forcibly beaten to force them into the parlor. And then when the cows are being picked up by chains around their necks with the tractor, that's because those cows are worn out. They collapsed in the parlor, and they literally cannot get up under with their own strength.
They're known as down cows.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So, yeah. What was I going to say? So, anyways, you've been doing TV outreach for animals, which we participated in last week, and... What that is you have like this huge screen TV or projection screen, I would say, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and we show graphic images of what's happening to animals. And in one of these segments, which I posted on our Facebook page today, by the way, Animal Voices Vancouver, if you want to see it, there's a section about dairy there. And everything that you've been talking about on the show today, it's illustrated. Right, it's illustrated on that video, and I'm wondering if you had like any interesting conversations with people who are watching that film about dairy, and maybe like they didn't know about these issues before, but you're bringing it to light to them.
Yeah, especially with the dairy and the egg industry, people are largely unaware. I know I was. I was a vegetarian before I went
vegan. Me too.
And like most people.
People say, but the cows don't get killed. But they do, as you just said. And they get treated severely poorly as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like everybody, like I've never met a person who wants animals to suffer. But it's largely, multiple factors, cultural conditioning. But especially with dairy and eggs, people are just unaware of the cruelty that's just inherent. Mm-hmm. And like even when on the most humane certified organic free-range farm, when farmers are following best practices, we're still taking their babies away. Their bodies are still being worn out. They're still being forcibly impregnated and then ultimately sent to the slaughterhouse to have their throat slit. Like that's what happens on the best farms in the country.
And people also often are not aware that dairy is not the only source of calcium in the world, that it's a relatively new thing in human evolution for human beings to consume dairy past weaning. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of other ways to get calcium.
And we'll find out more about that in our feature interview today for sure. And the one thing that I wanted to mention as well is you're talking about these animals being beaten with a cane, right? In the outgoing song for today's show, it's a song called The Truth About Dairy, and it actually has some audio footage of actual farmers at another Mercy for Animals investigation at the Conklin Dairy Farm in the U.S. And it's really gratuitous. There's a lot of violence and swear words about how these farmers are talking about how they treated the animals. So maybe you can just talk a little bit about how, you know, these workers experience violence because that's their job and they bring it out to the animals.
Yeah, it's like every time the Canadian public sees the footage that comes out of these farms, they're shocked and appalled. But to the workers, it doesn't seem like that in the moment at all, because when the job that you're doing is just inherently cruel,
right.
Cutting off cows' tails, just forcing chunks of coagulated milk out of their udders when they're infected with mastitis, beating them, lifting up, a long list of things that we do to them.
It's just a dirty job.
When the job is just inherently cruel, these other acts of gratuitous, egregious violence mm-hmm. seem mild
right.
compared to just the standard practice.
So please have sympathy, too, that there are human workers that are being involved in the system because there's supply and demand for it. And you can easily stop that demand by ditching dairy. Very quickly to end here, I understand the BCSPCA has intervened with these calves. And what is the current status of the two remaining calves?
They're still on the farm that we've been in Langley that we've been talking about. Because the BCSPCA stepped in, they have been forced to provide vet care. I mean, this is another issue with dairies and all farm agriculture, is the financial incentives work against the well-being of the animals. Like in this instance, it's cheaper to buy a whole new animal than to provide one visit from the vet to provide vet care. So from an economic perspective, it makes no sense for the farmer to provide the care that these animals deserve.
Right. And so, again, I would just like to say we can stop this by just putting an end to the supply and demand for these products. Thank you for coming on the show today, Jeff, to tell us the story of these animals found in an abusive situation on a Langley farm last month, and for shedding light on the dairy industry itself. See you again soon at a local demo. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Now for some local events. This Sunday, January 21st, Direct Action Everywhere will hold a light brigade demonstration to increase awareness of the animal cruelty involved in the production of Canada Goose brand coats and other products. There will be an optional potluck before the demonstration at 1:30. At 4:15, head off together to the Vancouver Art Gallery downtown and meet on the stairs on Robson Street. The action will begin at 5 p.m. For those not attending the potluck, there will be a second debriefing at 4:45. These light brigades will be taking place all around Canada. Posters and leaflets specific to Canada Goose will be provided. To RSVP, go to the Direct Action Everywhere Vancouver Facebook page.
I just wanted to say as well that Montreal had their light brigade last year. The video we posted on our Facebook page today, it looks really good, and I'll be there because I think Canada Goose sucks, and we need to get the word out, and this is one effective way that we can be out there this week.
Awesome. Again, this is Sunday, this coming Sunday, the 21st of January, at 1:30 for potluck, 4:45 for Canada Goose action at Robson Square. Another direct action event is an egg day of action, Sunday, January 28th from 1:30 till 3. Eggs are labeled in many ways which mislead the public about what really happens to chickens, whether hens are so-called free-range, organic, etc. Come to this action and show people the truth about the egg industry. People are needed to hold signs and do outreach and leafleting. If you would like to speak out, please let the organizers know. If you are nervous about participating, you can just stand and quietly hold a sign or take pictures, film, or live stream the event. Any level of participation is welcomed and supported. Please meet at Wendy's, which is 480 West 8th Avenue at 1 p.m. sharp for a mandatory briefing. The group will then head over to another location for a quick demo inside a large chain that sells eggs, and then gather outside for speakouts, leafleting, and outreach. Afterwards, debrief and grab a bite or drink. Again, that's Sunday, January 28th at 1 p.m. sharp at Wendy's, 480 West 8th Avenue at Cambie. And there is a new all-vegan food and beverage event coming to Vancouver, and it's called The Main Affair. A one-night-only food fest and dinner hybrid, this shindig will feature vegan food and beverage entrepreneurs along with local plant-based chef Karen McCarthy, who will be creating some delectable vegan tapas. Attendees can indulge in an assortment of canapé, vegan cheese, and desserts. And the best part? Open bar. Yes, unlimited cocktails are totally a thing at the Main Affair.
I think the best part is the cheese by Karen.
Yeah. And it's not just free-flowing holistic cocktails that they offer. They've also got craft beer, wine, kombucha, and other non-alcoholic beverages. There will be two seatings from 6 to 8 and from 9 to 11. Live entertainment from local bands, a product marketplace, and door prizes can also be expected. Proceeds from this event will go to the Society for Advancement of Musicians. Friday, February 9th, 6 or 9 p.m., Heritage Hall, 3102 Main Street, Vancouver. Tickets via Eventbrite. Again, the name of the event is The Main Affair. And that's it for events.
If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
In recent news, Vancouver Aquarium CEO John Nightingale has announced that the aquarium will no longer display cetaceans, which are whales, dolphins, and porpoises. Here to speak with us today is Gary Charbonneau, creator of the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. Welcome, Gary.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks for being here. So on December the 8th, John Nightingale was suing the Park Board for banning cetacean shows and display at the aquarium. We're still awaiting the judge's verdict. And so why do you think Mr. Nightingale made this decision ahead of that court verdict?
That's an excellent question. And people have been wondering if it was because of public pressure. Now, public pressure was immense. There's no doubt. And it's been incredibly helpful. But what really transpired in the past month, we're not too sure. If I was to guess, I would say that there's a lot of internal pressure that's been happening. Perhaps donors are no longer wanting to support captivity. So something's happened in the past month that has forced Mr. Nightingale to bring this forward.
And John Nightingale has stated that he's ending captivity of cetaceans because it's interfering with his conservation efforts. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's perplexing in the sense that Mr. Nightingale only allocates 15% to conservation research and education combined, which means conservation is only receiving 5%. So as a mandated area, it is grossly underfunded. So it's strange that Mr. Nightingale would say that this is so important to him when it clearly isn't important. So a lot of people are starting to question what his priorities actually are.
And he's also saying that he wants to continue with rescues. What's your opinion on that?
Well, Mr. Nightingale has a different definition of rescue. When you look at his last three dolphins, which are under his rescue and rehabilitation program, the Vancouver Aquarium did not rescue those animals. All three dolphins were purchased from Japanese Aquaria. Spinnaker was in Osaka Marine Aquarium performing tricks for 10 years. Before the Vancouver Aquarium purchased him. Helen and Hannah were at Enoshima Aquarium for 9 and 2 years respectively. So he was buying dolphins that do tricks and labeling that as rescue. So once again, the public has a different perception of what rescue should be. Now, what rescue should be is when we find a cetacean on our coast, that is a true rescue. And if they're not rehabilitatable in the sense that they need a home, then people would automatically believe that they should go to the aquarium as opposed to perhaps another aquarium. Where that animal should go is into a sea pen if it's non-releasable. And if there's no sea pen available at this time, they should temporarily go to the best aquarium possible until a sea pen is constructed, and there's one coming in Canada, I believe, in the next 3 years. However, the problem with the sea pens with Mr. Nightingale is that they don't make money, so he doesn't support sea pens, and the sea pens are being built, and I believe that Mr. Nightingale should follow in the footsteps of the Baltimore Aquarium, where they're building their own sea pen to retire their dolphins. And the question remains is that why isn't Mr. Nightingale supporting sea pens? And if a cetacean is found on our coast, should the Vancouver Aquarium automatically receive that animal? And when you look at the statistics with a 90% infant death rate, short lifespans, and 6 out of their 7 cetaceans dying within the last 2 years, that's probably the last place where a cetacean should go is the Vancouver Aquarium. They do not have a good track record. So when you talk about actual rescues, first and foremost, if they cannot be released, they should go to a sea pen, and if not, the best aquarium temporarily until the sea pen is ready.
And what will happen to Helen, the remaining Pacific white-sided dolphin, who is now alone in her tank? And what would you like to see happen to her?
Well, Mr. Nightingale has provided a couple options, whether they try to move her, but she is older, and that is a bit dangerous, there's no doubt. But at the same time, it's dangerous to keep her there. Like, all the cetaceans have died except for her, so it may be just a matter of time before she passes away, being at the Vancouver Aquarium with such a high death rate. But he's also stated that he would like to bring in a companion animal. Well, this is where we get concerned. It's just like buying the dolphins from Japan. It's a loophole that he finds to bring in cetaceans. So if you bring in a companion animal for Helen, which sounds good, sounds like you have compassion, the problem is that when Helen passes, then we need another companion animal and another one. So this is not even an option. What should happen is that Helen should be carefully moved to a sea pen. And there, I believe that there's one in Florida that may actually take her. So we should really do what's right for Helen, and bringing in more cetaceans is not the answer.
So where can our listeners find out more about the Vancouver Aquarium from all the years of research that you've done on the facility?
Well, there's a lot of information that's now coming to fruition. In my film, I do talk a lot about of the things that I've uncovered. So I think that the general public is hearing it from the news, from animal educators, and just different media, and just the public in general.
Mm-hmm. So VancouverAquariumUncovered.com is where people can see the film for free, and they can also check out the WhaleSanctuaryProject.org if they want to donate to the Whale Sanctuary.
That's excellent places to go. Great. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Gary, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Our feature interview today is with Dotsie Bausch. She is the founder of the nonprofit animal protection organization called Compassion Champs, as well as a plant-based cycling athlete who won an Olympic silver medal in 2012, is an 8-time U.S. national champion, a former world record holder, and a 2-time Pan American gold medal winner. Compassion Champs is based out of California and seeks to educate audiences worldwide on the immense, widespread suffering of animals every year in our industrial food industry. It encourages a planet-friendly, health-centered, and compassionate way of eating, and their goal is to create a global movement of athletes, champions, and visionaries who believe compassion can coexist with their nutrition plan. Dotsie is here with us today to speak about the Plant Milk Challenge, which is happening this week until January 20th, and how she seeks to inspire the next generation of compassion champions. Hello, Dotsie, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hello there, Allison. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be on. I love what you guys do.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today to tell us about your organization, Compassion Champs, and the Plant Milk Challenge. To start, though, I would love to know about your vegan journey and how you came to live a life where you are living in alignment with your personal values that many of us hold as ethical values ourselves.
Yes. Well, I was about halfway through my career as a professional cyclist. And one night, I was up in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. I had trained too hard that week and I wasn't recovering well. And I was just up in the middle of the night. And it came across this really horrific, what many of us would know as undercover investigations, but it was on TV, which was bizarre. It wasn't on the internet. And I could tell it was in another country because of their language. And so it was exposing the cruelty behind pork production and then also beef production. And I felt wildly disturbed and frustrated and scared almost that this could actually be something that was real and could potentially be taking place in my country. And so I woke up the next morning and started doing, you know, what ended up being like over 20 hours of research and just went almost vegan overnight. I recognize that I can't consciously support this. I it's not okay. And I'm aware that I vote with my wallet. So I have to stand up and I have to help decrease the demand for this. And eventually, if enough people decrease the demand by not buying it, it will stop. And I don't think that we're too far from that. I mean, I think we've got some years ahead of us, but that's what's happening.
Well, can you tell us about Compassion Champs and the mission behind it? You say it's not just an organization, but it's a movement. And 60 billion animals are killed each year for food, but most people say they don't want to harm animals. So what is the idea behind becoming a compassionate champion?
Yes. Well, being a compassion champ is just simply accepting that you desire to live in alignment with your values and act accordingly. You know, there's so many people that love animals. I mean, you know, the statistics tell us it's like 99% people say they love animals. But then they turn the other way when they're introduced to seeing what these animals have to go through to make it to their plate. So being a compassion champ means that you're choosing a conscience over ease and a moment of desire, if you will. But it also means that you believe that true strength is compassion. We do a lot with strength is compassion. And that just means that, you know, people who are strong and competitive and fierce and badasses in life can also be compassionate and empathetic and kind. Because strength and compassion don't often go hand in hand in our, you know, worldly rhetoric. But that's something that we are very focused on, and we're going to change that.
Well, I want to learn more about the Plant Milk Challenge, which is happening right now until January the 20th. But of course, anyone can do their own Plant Milk Challenge at any time. And you have a variety of resources posted now on the Facebook group called Plant Milk Challenge 2018. So why should people embrace the plethora of plant-based milks that we have available now instead of consuming the breast milk from another species, such as a cow?
Great question, and also a great point. And we're going to have all of those educational resources up on the Facebook group Plant Milk Challenge 2018 forever. So it's in the files section on the left-hand side of that group. So if people want to access that and kind of go through the 10-day challenge themselves, because it does end on the 20th, then they can do that. But, you know, plant milks are just so plentiful. I mean, I've counted, there's at least 12 of them, which is amazing. And there's something for everyone. Let's say if you need more protein in your diet, then you would choose soy milk. If you need more essential fatty acids, which many do, then you would choose coconut milk. If you need something that's a lower calorie, then you would choose rice milk. And all of these plant milks are nutrient dense. They're easy on digestion. You obviously don't have to worry about lactose intolerance because there's no lactose. They come without hormones. They come without casein, which is the protein found in dairy, which in my opinion is the most important part, because that has been named as the most significant chemical carcinogen ever discovered by Dr. Colin Campbell of the China Study. That's big stuff. And you can read all about his research either by buying the book, The China Study, or of course you can do online research. And then maybe my favorite, they also all come without any cruelty involved. So, you know what the main question people ask too is, they love to say, oh my gosh, how am I going to get enough calcium, you know, if I'm not ingesting cow's milk? And there's plenty of calcium in some of these plant milks, but I think it's important to even open it up and just look at our sources of food. Bok choy, many different nuts, legumes, collard greens, and some whole grains have more calcium, significantly more calcium actually, than dairy milk for the same size serving. So it's important just to kind of, you know, blow the top off of this calcium myth and just look in the foods that you have available to eat that have more calcium.
Well, I want to know, what are some of your favorite plant milks and the ones that you'd like to recommend to our listeners? You said there's at least a dozen different kinds, if not more even. I'm seeing more and more different kinds of plants that you can make milk out of.
You're right. Well, I love cashew milk. If I'm just going to drink it straight, cashew milk's my favorite. If I'm going to make a smoothie or a shake, I love coconut milk. The coconut milk, you know, tastes like a coconut, so you've got to, you know, it's kind of strong flavor, so you've got to like that. And I don't necessarily like coconut flavor in my coffee. So for creamer for my coffee, I like soy milk. It's thick and rich and creamy, and I like that. And then for cereals and oatmeal stuff, I love flaxseed milk. It's probably my favorite.
Cool. Well, as a top performing athlete in cycling, you have won an Olympic silver medal, 2 Pan American gold medals, and you're also a former world record holder and an 8-time U.S. national champion. So I would love to know what you have to say about following a vegan diet that omits dairy, eggs, and meat and has supported you in being one of the world's top athletes. Can you share some advice about plant-based living as a high-performing athlete and how our listeners can be inspired to do the same, even if just to improve their performance and recovery times that will give them an edge over meat eaters and races?
Yes, definitely. I'd love to. So I won my silver medal in cycling at the London 2012 Olympic Games. And I was 39 and a half years old when I stood on the podium there. And most people will recognize that that's, you know, kind of over the hill for for an Olympian. And so I was as a good 10, 15, 20 years older than some of my competitors. The Great Britain team, for example, they were all, they were 19, 20, 21. So I guess I could have been their mother. But my race really was in my repair and my recovery, you know, because I made the Olympic team. You know, I found out a couple months before the Olympics, but in the entire journey, you're just trying to make the team, you know, and so that's a fight within itself. So I really had to focus on my recovery and my repair, you know, and trying to speed it up. So when I went plant-based, like I said earlier, I did it 100% because of the cruelty involved to the animals. But I was flabbergasted when I started the journey and realized how quickly I was recovering in between workouts, recovering overnight. And I started to look deeper to try to understand why this was the case. I mean, it was awesome, but I didn't really understand why. And one aspect of it is that, you know, it takes anywhere from 18 to 24 hours for a piece of decaying flesh, because that's what it is at that point, right? Mm-hmm. When it's dead, to digest fully in your stomach and make it all the way through your intestinal tract and out. But it takes plants only about 4 to 5 hours from beginning to end. So this makes it so that your body can actually spend its energy on other things like repairing muscle tissue and recovering instead of spending its energy and resources on digestion. So there, you know, it's multi-layered. There are a lot of reasons for it, but that's the one that I think resonates with people the most, because it's just like, wow, nobody ever thought that this, you know, dead rotting flesh was sitting in your stomach and moving through your intestines, and it took a full day. That's, you know, that's a lot of work for your body. So that was probably my favorite thing about going plant-based, was just how quickly I was recovering. And then as we got towards the Olympics, my teammates were all like starting to ask me, you know, what is going on? What are you doing? And they knew I was on a plant-based diet, but of course they didn't think that was it, right? They didn't point to that. Like, you guys, it's plants. I'm telling you, that's all I'm doing. So.
Yeah, well, we are seeing more and more athletes going plant-based, and I'm really excited about the upcoming film called The Game Changers, which debuts at the Sundance Film Festival this weekend, and it will be having a theater run. It's produced by James Cameron and Louis Fissoyas, who directed The Cove, and you are involved in this film as well. So can you tell us about the film and why you think that this movie may be a game changer itself in the way people view vegan diets for health and fitness in the future?
Yeah, I really hope it is. I'm so excited to go and spend the week next week at Sundance Film Festival with the whole crew from The Game Changers. We'll be premiering it Friday night, but then we'll have a screening every day after that and get a chance to do panels afterwards. So hopefully it's a great educational experience. But The Game Changers is really, they did a significant amount of research before they ever started making this film. And one thing that they found is that men who go vegetarian, only about 15% of them stay vegetarian after about 6 months. And they found that 85% of women who go veg stay veg. So they recognize that it's really the men that are stopping this movement going forward. But, you know, it's okay. I mean, you know, it's tough being a guy and standing up and saying, you know, I don't need meat to be strong. So, but this film really just kind of blows the doors off the myth that real men eat meat. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's what it's focused on. I'm one of the only females in the film. There's male bodybuilders, weightlifters. There's the world's strongest man. There's scientists, doctors, environmental strategists. There's, you know, it kind of, you know, runs the gamut. They even do, and I'm not giving this away too much, but they even do an experiment and show it in the film, although not in completeness, on male flaccidity. So yes, that's, you heard me right. So the most fascinating part of this is they, I won't give away the answer, but they do find out that, you know, a vegan diet is not only excellent for you in that area after eating it for a month or 3 months or 6 months, but it literally changes from meal to meal. So these guys eat like a meat burrito, and then others eat a cheese burrito, and then others eat just a bean burrito. And then you'll see what happens in the film. But they really, I think, hit the nail on the head with that. I told the guys, I said, you know, that's the only scene you need to show. And then all men will become vegan overnight.
I've heard that before.
You know?
It's a driving factor. Sounds like a great film. I'm so excited to see it. Well, as part of your mission to show that the world's top performing athletes can thrive on a compassionate plant-based diet, your outreach efforts with Compassion Champs include working with professional athletes and Olympic sports to replace their meat and dairy sponsorships with plant-based alternatives. Can you tell us more about this, please?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'll try to be kind of brief. It turned into a whole campaign for us. You know, quite simply, it started with me sitting on the couch one evening looking through a triathlon magazine, and I came across a Milk Life ad with a very well-known Ironman triathlete in the ad. It was a woman who I know. And, you know, she's promoting milk. It's just, you know, the greatest recovery ever. And I thought to myself, oh my God, if she knew, because she's a wonderful, kind, loving person, if she knew about the intense cruelty behind dairy, she would never support this and she would never take their money because she's obviously being sponsored by them. So off of that, I launched our Compassion Champs X Milk campaign, and we sent letters to every athlete across the world that are sponsored by Big Dairy, basically underneath the Built with Chocolate Milk campaign and the Milk Life campaign. And we expose what goes on behind the dairy industry, you know, complete with videos and, you know, quotes from workers and all sorts of information. And, you know, much to my chagrin, they did not all accept what I said. I got some FUs back, and I got some, wow, are you kidding me? This is, what are you talking about? And let me know more, which was exciting. And with those athletes, we then are working now on matching them with plant-based milk sponsors or just plant-based food sponsors to ditch their dairy sponsorships, stop taking money from that cruel industry, and support, you know, plant-based lifestyle. So we have some great athletes that have kind of switched over and come over to the light side from the dark side, and we're matching them with plant-based sponsors.
Well, I think you are making such great change in the world, and I love that you're using your niche as a professional athlete to get into this area that wouldn't be accessible to the rest of us. So thank you for doing this, Dotsie. I just love it when people use their strengths to do good for the world. And I know your heart delves deep into social justice issues and how these affect us as a society, as human beings, and the animals that we share this planet with. Now, what would you like to tell our listeners about how we can view animals in this world and how we can vote for compassion with our forks?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, really at the forefront of it is asking the right questions. And one of those is, you know, do animals experience human-like emotions? I mean, we're humans, so we're the only ones that understand our own emotions. So we ask that question. And it seems very obvious to those of us who have companion animals. I have a couple of dogs that they experience things like, you know, desire, right? When they want their foods or their treats, or they know where their treats are located and they go find them and look at you, they experience sadness. I see them experience thrill at the dog park, anticipation, or even anxiety when I'm leaving the house. These are all emotions, pretty rich, deep emotions that our dogs show us. But then you speak to so many different people who just say, you know, things like, oh my God, I had no idea that chickens were smart. I had no idea they create rich familial bonds or have friends and enemies, and that some chickens are introverted and some are extroverted. And we just don't know this because we've been conditioned, right, otherwise, so that we don't feel bad about eating them. I mean, that's what it boils down to, that, you know, why we love some animals, eat others, you know, Melanie Joy's ideas about that. So I think one of the best books that I love on this subject is by the renowned behaviorist Carl Safina, who wrote the book, What Animals Think and Feel. I think that it's important to listen to somebody who's spent a lifetime researching the behaviors and feelings and intuitions that animals have. So if people have questions about if animals experience emotions, that's a fantastic book to pick up. So, you know, I think that's the main question. Once we answer that question and the question is answered with the truth, which is absolutely yes, they do, it's almost impossible not to vote for compassion with your fork. And by saying that, I just mean, you know, you make a conscious choice every single day, 3, 4, 5 times a day, how many ever times you eat a day, to choose compassion over cruelty. And as I said earlier, if we don't buy these products and many, many, many people stop buying these products, the demand will go down. So we're voting with our fork.
And I always say this, and I know you do as well, is that every animal wants to live just as much as a human does, if not even more. So what right do we have to take that from them, right? I think that's really what it comes down to when we answer that question, do animals have emotions?
Yeah, that's really the best point, I think, really, is that we are taking the lives of living beings that do not want to die. They do not want to die. And I came closest to that at a pig vigil with LA Animal Save here in Los Angeles at Farmer John's. And coming eye to eye with those blessed, beautiful souls that were on their way in. And you can see it in their eyes. You can see it in their expressions. You can see it in their body language, in their movement. They want to do every single thing they can to survive. That's how we're created, as all species are created. And from what I've seen so far, you know, is to defend ourselves and stay alive, and our families, right? And our families and friends, which they all have families and friends, which is another thing we don't think about very often.
Right. And what do you say to people who think that, well, this is just such a huge problem, I'm only one person, I can't make a difference?
Yeah. And I think that can be kind of common. You know, you hear that all too often. You know, I think that, you know, here in the States, we just celebrated Martin Luther King Day. So that would probably be one of the greatest examples that we have in history of one person making a difference. And we think of him as the man that stood up and, you know, spoke to millions and millions of people and had this great, larger than life voice and personality. But he didn't start like that. He didn't start that way. He just said one thing to one person that said, this isn't right. I don't like this. We shouldn't support this. This doesn't feel okay. We need to make a change, right? He was just one person that said that. Just like Rosa Parks was one person that just one day said, that's enough, I'm sitting in the front of the bus. She would have never thought in a million years that that was going to go down in history. So when we make one choice at Starbucks to say, can you please make this with coconut milk instead of cow's milk? Somebody in the line hears you, and I've had it happen many times, well, engage in a conversation or ask a question. Oh, is the coconut milk any good? I haven't thought of trying it. And it can start a conversation about what the cow's milk is and where it came from and all of that. It doesn't happen all the time, but there's just an example right there. So one person can, and the ripple effect from that one person that you spoke to in Starbucks, who knows? Who knows where that can go?
Absolutely. So for our listeners who would like to find out more about Compassion Champs and how they can embrace a plant milk challenge themselves, what are the next steps that you would like to suggest to them?
Well, so yeah, Plant Milk Challenge ends on the 20th, but still go to the Facebook page, which is just Plant Milk Challenge 2018. If you put it in the search box, it'll pop up so that you can still gather all of the resources and all of the education information that we put out throughout the 10 days. And then if you go to compassion-champs.org. I think the viewers might enjoy watching some of our champion stories, which are just called champ stories in the menu bar. There's some really motivating, inspiring stories that I think that people will find interesting to take their plant-based journey. But one thing, you know, we just launched in April, so we're pretty new and we're just getting started. And currently right now we're creating a Compassion Champ school tour. So our goal for this is to take it, you know, hopefully worldwide, but to teach young children the components of compassion, whether it's to each other or their parents or families or animals. And every activity that we're planning so far for this program is completely interactive. So in other words, the children don't just learn in like classroom what compassion means. They get to experience it and then they report back on how it made them feel. So if any of the listeners, you know, have a soft spot in their heart for young children and compassion, which I'm sure they do. There's a couple of things that I need right now to get this program up and running. It's some teachers who want to help me create these compassionate experiences. I don't have a ton of experience with young elementary children, so I really need some teachers to step up and say, hey, let me help you with this. I have some ideas. And then I also need poor people, of course, who can either donate or help us fundraise so that we can get this mission and program off the ground and start sending compassion champs into these schools to teach compassion.
Well, thank you, Dotsie, for coming on the show today to tell us about the Plant Milk Challenge Compassion Champs and what it's like to be a top performing vegan athlete. To find out more, go to Plant Milk Challenge 2018 on Facebook or visit the website compassion-champs.org. Thanks, Dotsie, and have a great time at the Sundance Film Festival next week.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed being on and hoping everybody gets a chance to see Game Changers this coming year.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show on Friday, January 26, 2018. It's going to be a surprise. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. AnimalVoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts. You can read our show blog there with detailed links. You can also subscribe to us via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So today's show has highlighted facts about the dairy industry, and to end the show, we have a very educational song called The Truth About Dairy by Jonathan Mann to play for you. And just as a warning, as I mentioned before, there are some swear words here at the end of the song, but they are actually real life audio clips taken from workers in the dairy industry that appropriately illustrate the cruelty behind it. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
I used to think if I didn't eat meat that I was doing my part. I couldn't give up cheese and dairy, and I didn't see why I should start. After all, cows always give milk to be enjoyed by me and you. I never stopped to question whether or not that is true. But now I know that dairy cows are kept pregnant just about their entire lives, artificially inseminated, moving lonely wives.
Young birth every year, baby cows just taken away, and that's how you get your cheese each and every day. In the eyes of this system, well, they got no right to live. They are just a thing left over, wasted life into a meal, when they end up on a dinner plate, 'cause someone ordered veal.
Cows, cows, they're just mothers without their children.
Can we stab her, broke her tail for a place, kept stabbing her ass, beat her. Next day, Gary said, we're going to send her a beef, but she had mastitis power. Couldn't get her in the parlor. We beat the fuck. I mean, I drunk that cow with a farm baby, and I beat that fucker till her face was like this big around.